argument, though I slept through it. Do you think Simon might have got the wrong end of the stick? I don't know. Simon liked Cameron a lot. He thought he was a good boss and he liked working here. It's possible he read more into it than there was. Having said that, she slowed her pace, then stopped entirely. What? He said. Listen, I just work here, Katie said finally. She gazed out across the yard. I didn't take this job looking to make friends or get involved, definitely not in anything like this. I'm just trying to earn some money. She turned to look at him. And I don't know what's going on, but there's something really messed up about what happened to Cameron. Nathan waited, the silence pressing in on them. When I saw Cam that last morning, he told me he'd be back the next day, Katie said. And I can't explain, so don't ask, but I'm sure that he meant it. I don't know what happened in between, but that morning, Cameron was planning on coming home. I wish someone else had been there to see him. Simon, or the girls even, they'd tell you. Well, there was Ilse, Nathan hesitated. She saw him. Yeah, I suppose she did. Katie started walking towards the house again. And she reckons he said much the same as he said to you, that he'd be back the next day. Well, a small shrug. I was too far away to hear, so we'll have to take Ilse's word for it. And yours? Katie looked up at his tone, then gave a hard half-smile. That's true, although... She broke off suddenly, looking at the house. Nathan followed her gaze and could see a shadow in one of the windows that had previously been empty. Simon. He was looking out at them, his eyes hidden by the reflection of the glass. Katie started walking faster, and Nathan jogged a couple of paces to catch up with her. Although what? He said. What were you about to say? It's nothing. It doesn't matter. It does. Honestly, I'm not looking to cause trouble. I'm trying to mind my own business. Come on, Katie. Nathan stopped walking. Please. He's dead. I know that. But she stopped. All right, it's just... If that's the only thing Cameron and Ilse said to each other that morning, they took their time getting it out. She seemed to debate for a moment. Plus, Ilse didn't wave him off as he drove away. So, that doesn't mean anything. Maybe not. Katie's dark, smudged eyes gave him a look he couldn't decipher. But when you leave, she waves to you. They stared at each other, then Katie shrugged. I told you it was nothing. She shoved the tissue into her jeans pocket. Thanks for before, by the way. I feel better now. He watched her walk away. When Nathan next looked back towards the house, Simon was gone. And every window was dark again. Chapter 23. Up close, Nathan thought it was interesting how things could appear so different. He stood alone in the living room, his nose near to Cameron's painting. The image of the stockman's grave hung on the wall at eye level. Outside, the night was drawing in, and it was hard to see the detail properly under the artificial glow of the ceiling light. Still, it was mildly hypnotic. Examining the lines of the brushwork and the way two colours bled together into something new. He was about to move away when his gaze snagged on the left edge of the painting. There was a dark smudge on the horizon that he'd never noticed before. It was a muted grey mark and faint to the point of transparency. Nathan frowned and leaned in. What on earth was that supposed to be? Person, a shadow, just a dirty mark. He reached out and lightly ran his thumb over it. No. Definitely paint. Deliberate and permanent on Cam's part, then. Cameron would kill you for that. Ilse's voice came from the doorway and he turned. Don't touch the picture. Golden rule in this house. Nathan put his hands up and took a step back. That's probably safer. She gave him a weary smile. He could hear the sounds of dinner being cleared away in the kitchen. The meal had been mostly silent and entirely subdued. Ilse, he said as she turned to leave. She stopped, waiting. I was talking to the girls earlier. They said you'd taken them out there. Nathan nodded at the picture. To the grave? Ilse said. How did that come up? Lo drew a picture of it. A ghost of a smile crossed her face. Right, of course. She came into the room and joined him in front of the painting. It was a stupid idea. I took them there for a picnic a few weeks ago after Sophie hurt her arm. I was trying to come up with something to take her mind off it, and I thought seeing the grave in person might help Lo. Remove the mystery, I guess. Sophie said you didn't stay long. No. Ilse gave a half laugh. I knew it was a bad plan the minute we got there. It was too hot. Lo was scared. I pretty much bundled them back into the car and drove home. It was a long way to go for 5 minutes, but it was for the best. We ended up having a picnic by the stables instead. I should have done that in the first place. Ilse was staring at Cameron's painting, and then slowly she took another step in until she was as close to the canvas as Nathan had been. Cameron wasn't happy when he heard we'd been out there, she said. Nathan couldn't see her face now. Why not? He didn't like it that I took the girl so far. He said it was too isolated and exposed for this time of year. Ilse leaned in, examining the solid dark paint of the grave. She raised a hand slowly and extended her index finger. He said it was dangerous. Her finger hovered an inch from the canvas. It's kind of funny, she said in a voice that suggested it wasn't funny at all. How it turned out, he was right. Half an inch.
No! Don't touch the painting, Mummy!
The voice at the doorway sounded horrified. Nathan turned to see Sophie, open-mouthed. Ilse immediately curled her fingers into a fist and dropped her hand.
Daddy's painting is off-limits,
Sophie recited. I know. Ilse stepped away and relief and confusion crossed Sophie's face. She caught sight of the beer in Nathan's hand.
No food or drinks near the pitcher either.
Yes, we both know, Soph, Ilse said. No one was touching it, we were just looking.
It's bad luck. The stockman will get upset.
Ilse appeared to be fighting not to roll her eyes. She succeeded, barely. Sweetheart, the only person who got upset about fingerprints on the painting was Dad. Come on, it's time for bed anyway. Sophie threw a final warning look at Nathan, then reluctantly disappeared back into the hall. Ilse went to follow, pausing at the door. She's right, though, she said. Cam really hated anyone touching the painting. I'd better leave it alone then. She nodded as she left. By himself once more, Nathan collapsed onto the couch. As he took a mouthful of beer, his eye was drawn to the darkened window. He paused, bottle halfway to his mouth. Something was different. The night was somehow not as black as it had been. Nathan hauled himself to his feet and looked out through the glass. His reflection stared back at him, with an expression he didn't quite recognize. He gazed beyond it, into the night. From the angle of the window, it took him a moment to process what he was seeing. A pair of headlights, their beams piercing through the dark. He could hear a soft hum. In the otherwise empty driveway, Cameron's car was running. The white light was blinding. Nathan put his arm up to shield his eyes from the headlights, but it made no difference. His night vision was shot
He stood alone on the driveway. He couldn't see into the car. He could see nothing, in fact, but the brilliant cones of light. He made himself walk straight to the driver's side, and his hand was on the door when it clicked open. The interior light went on. It was no match for the headlights, and it still took Nathan's eyes a minute to adjust. Xander sat behind the wheel.
Jesus!
Nathan dropped his hand. You scared me. Xander said nothing, just stared out through the windscreen. Nathan walked around the front of the car, his shadow slicing through the perfect beams of light. He tried to open the passenger side door. It was locked. For a split second, Nathan realized he wasn't sure what his son was going to do next. A beat passed. Then Xander leaned over, lifted the old manual door lock and let him in. You couldn't have turned the lights down? Nathan blinked. I can't see a thing. No apology. That was new. His vision still a little dazzled, Nathan looked at his teenage son slumped in the seat and possibly for the first time ever found himself wondering what his ex-wife would advise. What are you doing? He said. Nothing. That was probably partly true. Xander wasn't wearing a seatbelt and the car was in neutral with the air conditioner running. It didn't look like he'd been planning on going anywhere. Okay. Nathan sat back. In the ghostly glow of the headlights, he could see the smear of dead insects and baked-on dust on the glass. A large part of his reluctance around fatherhood, he had realized after Xander was born, had been fear. It had been deep and ingrained in a way that Nathan tried to keep buried. He had not told Jackie. Instead, he had stumbled his way through by thinking about how his own father would react to any given situation and then, with sustained effort at times, doing exactly the opposite. A lot of the time, that meant simply shutting his mouth. So that's what he did now. He settled in, making himself comfortable against the worn car seat. Xander turned his head but didn't say anything as Nathan closed his eyes. Nathan wasn't worried. He could do silence better than anyone he knew. He could literally go weeks without speaking and had done several times. Xander, raised amid city bustle and constant noise, would talk first. I really liked Uncle Cam. Nathan opened his eyes. Not even 3 minutes he could see from the clock on the dashboard. It's strange without him. Xander's voice was quiet. I know. Nathan did understand. Sometimes he felt that everywhere he looked here, he was reminded of Cameron. The pair of them practicing cricket in the yard as kids, pushing themselves to outdo each other on horses as teenagers, trying to make a living from the land as men. Cameron had always been methodical in his approach to life. He had thought through what he needed to do to achieve his desired outcome, then he'd done exactly that. Nathan leaned more towards having a crack and hoping for the best. Cameron's way proved better time after time. I came out to search a bit more. Xander nodded at the nearest shed. See if I could work out what Uncle Cam might have lost. If Lo was right. Well, yeah, exactly. Who knows? Xander shook his head. And it's pointless anyway. You could search for something until you died out here and never find it. There's too much bloody space. I suppose. It's true. Xander turned to Nathan, his voice more urgent. I've been thinking. You should leave here. Nathan blinked. What do you mean? Leave your property, move away, do something completely different. Like what? What are you talking about? Come to Brisbane. I can't come to Brisbane. What would I do in Brisbane? Nathan tried to imagine himself. Concrete under his boots, walls everywhere, cars all over the place. Do anything, Xander was saying. There must be some other job you could do. Work in a park or something. It doesn't have to be in an office. What about the property? Abandon it. I can't, mate. Nathan lowered his voice, even though they were the only ones around. I can't afford to. I owe the bank. I'd need to sell. Then sell. Jesus, Xander, who'd to?
I don't know, just get rid of it somehow. Please, Dad. You need to leave. It's not good out here.
What's wrong, mate? Why are you suddenly saying this? He knew exactly why.
Because.
Nathan waited. Less than 30 seconds this time.
Because I don't want you to end up like Uncle Cameron.
Xander.
What?
Xander snapped. It's not going to happen? Is that what you're going to say? Let me guess, you're absolutely fine and there's no way you would consider doing what Uncle Cam did. Nathan didn't reply.
Because everyone thought Cam was fine,
Xander went on.
Okay, maybe not completely fine these past couple of weeks, but way better than you.
Nathan had never seen his son like this and it scared him a little. No one ever says you're fine, Dad. When I come to visit or talk to Grandma on the phone, no one ever says you're doing well.
Nathan was quiet.
Harry said you got rid of your gun license.
For Christ's sake, Harry should mind his own business.
Are you going to get it back?
Yeah, I can do, seeing as it's causing everyone so much concern.
Nathan tried to make his voice light. I thought you'd be happy anyway. You're always off marching in those bloody rallies.
You don't trust yourself around them.
Why would that make me happy? Xander sounded suddenly exhausted.
That's not the reason, mate.
Isn't it?
No.
Nathan looked over.
No.
I mean, there's a whole rifle cabinet here, isn't there? I don't have any problem with that.
You're not all alone here.
Nathan made himself breathe in and out deep and long until he felt a little calmer.
Listen, I'm sorry. It's not your job to worry.
Don't be sorry, Xander cut in. Do something about it. Move away. Somewhere where there are other people. Make a fresh start. Maybe Mum could lend you some money. I know she left you, but...
The split was mutual, thanks, mate.
But she's a lot happier since she's been with Martin. I bet they'd help if I asked.
Don't ask. I mean it, Xander. Do not ask your mum.
Jesus, Dad, then you have to do something. Are you listening?
Xander ran a hand through his hair.
I'm afraid, all right, that the property and all this...
He gestured at the void outside the window.
All this bloody outback is going to get to you like it did to Uncle Cam.
The silence between them was almost louder than the thrum of the engine.
Nathan hadn't realised it was possible to feel worse about his situation.
You don't need to be scared. What can I do to make you feel better?
You can turn your own radio on for starters.
Okay, easy.
And use it once in a while. Let people know you're alive.
I already do that. I have that system. A year ago, after Nathan had been flooded and unreachable by phone for 2 weeks, Harry had driven over and presented him with a simple GPS satellite tracker.
I've been sent to give you this, he said.
You press this button for okay, this button for not okay. It sends a signal to Burley Downs. Press it every night, Nathan, no excuses.
So Nathan did. You should get another dog as well, Xander said.
I don't want another one.
I bet no one would mind if you took Cam's dog. She seems to like you.
I don't want her.
Why?
Because I don't want someone to bait her like they did with Kelly.
Xander was quiet.
I thought Kelly wasn't actually baited in the end.
She was.
Nathan shook his head. You think I don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I do. I believe you. Just I thought Glenn said there was no bait found and she must have been sick or something.
How do you know what Glenn said?
He told me last time I was here.
Right. Good.
Nathan stared straight ahead. There was a sharpness between them that he wasn't used to. Look, Dad, people are only worried because it doesn't take much for things to go wrong out here. And everyone knows you have it harder than anybody, harder than Uncle Cam and... Xander sighed. I mean, even he couldn't cope with it in the end. I know things haven't been great lately, but honestly, the problem's not the property, mate. Not just that anyway. What then? Nathan didn't answer immediately. I don't know, lots of things. I've made some bad choices, done some stupid things. That thing with bloody... with your granddad. He didn't go on, but it was such a well-worn path he could navigate it with his eyes closed. All those what-ifs. What if he hadn't been in town that day? What if he had filled up with fuel the night before and hadn't run into his father-in-law? What if he'd driven home an hour earlier or later and never seen Keith stop by the side of the road? What if he hadn't driven past a man in need of help? What if he had been a better man? That brought Nathan's thoughts to a halt in the same place every time. The answer swirled lazily in the air above the shining, shimmering road not taken. It's not just the property, Xander, he said again. That was true, he thought as he listened to the purr of his brother's car beneath them. It was also a silent radio, and the fact he couldn't get decent workers, and a sea of red bank statements, and a broken cool room, and now... he remembered with a flash of irritation at his son as he recalled his locked house, an invoice from an electrical contractor who he had to pay for doing bloody nothing but drive in and drive out again. It was Ilsa. Nathan's mind caught on something again and his train of thought screeched to a halt. He frowned. What had made him stop? Ilsa? No, not her for once. His property? Partly, but that wasn't it. Contractor. Maybe. Yes. What about him? Nathan tried to cast his mind back to their phone conversation earlier that day. So you won't even think about leaving? Xander's voice was cold in a way Nathan didn't recognize. It's not that I haven't thought about it. Nathan forced himself to focus. In the back of his mind, he could feel something lying just out of reach. What had the contractor said? He hadn't been able to fix the room. He would have to charge Nathan anyway, but he would knock some off the bill because he'd had to drive to Atherton that day anyway. What then? Xander was looking at him. What's keeping you here? Is it Ilsa? Is that it? No, mate. Whatever it is, Xander said. Is it more important than me? Nothing is more important than you, Xander. Then will you at least think about it? Please, Dad. Whatever happened to Cam, to make him drive out there, it was again. That loose thought again. Nathan tried to grasp it and separate out the strand. It was lost in a murky tangle. I don't want that to happen to you, Dad, okay? Pause. Okay. The answer came too late. Xander stared at him. You're not even listening to me. I am. Xander, mate, I am. I promise. You're not. I can see you're not. I am. I was just thinking. This is bullshit. Xander opened his door. Come on, please. Forget it. Xander turned the keys and cut the engine dead. The headlights flickered and disappeared, plunging them both into darkness. I don't care. Do whatever you want. I'm going to bed. He tossed the car keys at Nathan and slammed the door. Cameron's keys landed on the vinyl seat. Nathan reached down and felt the warm, jagged metal and the coil of the lanyard wrapped tight around his fingers. He was sitting there alone in the dark with his mind freewheeling when he caught it, the thought he had been chasing. It slid up against him, cold and disturbing and fully formed. Hey! He called out into the dark, but it was too late. No one was there to hear him. Xander was gone. Chapter 24 Nathan's passenger seat was empty, and for once that felt strange. He'd got used to Xander filling it out the last week or so. Duffy jumped up from the footwell and wagged her tail as she looked out of the window, but it wasn't the same. As Nathan approached the rocky outcrop, the road was completely deserted, and the morning sun was climbing in the sky. He glanced again at the empty seat and couldn't help thinking about the way Xander had looked at him in the pre-dawn light when Nathan had woken him to explain his plan. "Do you want to come?" Xander had just stared at him, then slowly shaken his head. "No." That was fine, Nathan thought, as he slowed and pulled off the road at the hidden track. He didn't need anyone else. It wasn't a two-man job anyway. He'd found the right gap in the rock straight away this time and drove through. At the top of the gentle slope was an empty space where Cameron's car had stood 4 days earlier. Nathan had managed to catch the contractor on the phone before the sun was up. Dave hadn't sounded happy about either the hour or the call.
"Mate, it's my day off. Look, I'm sorry about the call room, all right, but I was there like we arranged."
"Dave, it's not about that. Listen, you said you drove out to Atherton on Thursday. So you went along the North Road, right, past my boundary?"
"Yeah."
"What time?"
"I don't know. I set off usual times. It would have been about 8, I suppose, just after."
"So it was light then, light enough to see."
"Of course, I'm not driving that bloody road in the dark."
"You see anything from around my place?"
"Like what?"
"Anything. Up on the rocks."
A frustrated laugh. "Look, not that I remember, but I'm not sure what you're asking, mate."
"No, it's all right, me neither. Just trying to get a few things straight."
"That invoice is coming your way, I'm afraid."
"Yep, looking forward to it." Nathan had hung up and immediately dialed Glenn's number at the cop shop. He had heard the blip in the ringtone, the telltale sign he was being diverted. Glenn McKenna had been called out to the north of his patch, the officer who answered informed him. A road train had hit a tour bus. Multiple casualties, the voice said. He was not expected back to Ballymarra for a couple of days.
"What about the other one, the St. Helens cop?
Sergeant Ludlow." A tap of a keyboard. "Multiple casualties," the voice had repeated. Ludlow had been called out to the job as well.
"Can I help?" the voice said.
"Where are you based?" Nathan asked.
"Brisbane."
"So you're not exactly in a position to be much help."
"I'm in a position to take a message, mate."
Nathan had sensed movement in the hall behind him, but when he'd turned, no one was there. "Tell Sergeant McKenna that Jenna Moore isn't in the UK.
I don't know if he can check where she is, but..." Nathan hesitated.
"Just tell him I need to speak to him."
Nathan drove to the top of the slope this time and climbed out. He left the engine and aircon running for Duffy as he opened the back of his Land Cruiser, pulling out a shovel and the marker flags he used around his own property. He looked at the ground. There was no sign that Cameron's car had ever been there, so Nathan made his best guess, driving the flagpoles in at the points where he thought the wheels had stood. 20 minutes later, Nathan was sweating hard and still unable to get the fourth post securely into the ground. Frustrated, he finally propped it up against one of the others and hoped they would hold. He climbed into his driver's seat and was hit by a sudden sense of deja vu as he remembered doing exactly the same thing in Cameron's abandoned car on that very spot. Not exactly the same. Nathan's hands stilled on his steering wheel. He and Cameron had almost the same car and he was parked in almost the same place, but something was different this time. He tried to picture himself a few days earlier out here with Bub and Harry and Xander. He'd offered to drive Cam's car home, climbed into the worn driver's seat, reached down and adjusted the distance from the pedals. Nathan stopped. He and Cameron were the same height. They had been since they were teenagers. Why had he had to adjust the seat? Had either of the cops moved it during their search? Nathan didn't think so, but he wasn't sure. By how much had he had to correct it? Backwards first or forwards? He sat there for a long while trying to think. He couldn't remember. Finally, he started his engine and drove slowly down and out through the gap. He was back on the road in minutes, heading towards the boundary where his property bordered the gravel track. He drove along the deserted road until he was sure he had gone far enough then did a U-turn and headed back the way he'd come. He kept the speed steady, not too fast, not too slow, trying to guess what pace a contractor with only a couple of jobs lying between him and his Christmas break would do. He kept his eyes facing front, deliberately not scouring the rock face out of the driver's side window. 3 minutes later, he saw them. The flags caught his eye immediately, the poles tall against the sky and completely visible. They stayed in sight for as long as it took Nathan to breathe in and out a couple of times. Then the angle of the rocks shifted in the window and the flags disappeared from view. Nathan exchanged a look with Duffy, who appeared thrilled just to be there. He turned the car around and drove back. He tried again and nearly missed them this time, turning his head barely in time to see them slip out of sight. The third time, he knew he was on alert, but he saw them clearly once again. He counted as he passed. The flags were exposed for nearly 4 seconds, and these were only flags, he thought. Cam's white Land Cruiser would have been clearer. Nathan slowed the car as he approached the hidden gap and drove back in. He parked on the slope, thinking again about the position of Cameron's seat as he climbed out. The poles were far easier to pull out of the ground than they'd been to put in, and he was driving away in less than a minute. I was right, mate, he supposed he'd be able to say to Xander when he got back to the house, although he wasn't sure he would say it. Xander hadn't been too impressed by Nathan's theory that morning as he'd sat in bed and listened. Look, Nathan had whispered, not wanting to wake the whole household. If Dave drove to Atherton on Thursday morning, he should have spotted Cam's car on the rocks. Xander had rubbed some sleep from the corner of his eye and said nothing. But Dave didn't see the car, Nathan continued. He says he didn't. Why would a contractor lie about that? He's not even from around here. He only knew Cam to say hello to when he's out on a job. If he'd seen the car when he was driving past, he'd say so.
I suppose, but...
Xander had propped himself up on his pillow, his chest bare and his hair messy. What, mate?
Maybe he just missed it.
Why would he miss it? Glenn saw the car from the road, he told us. Glenn's a cop. He's trained to look for stuff like that, and he was coming to meet us, so he knew Cam's car was somewhere around here. That's why we should go and check, Nathan said. See how visible it would have been from the road.
And what if it was visible?
Xander sounded worried. If it was too obvious for the contractor to miss when he drove by, but he reckons he didn't see it, then what are you saying, that the car wasn't there on Thursday morning?
I don't know. Maybe. I suppose so.
But Steve said Uncle Cam was already dead by then, or nearly. So if his car wasn't where we found it, then what? Someone moved it. Nathan didn't say anything. Who would do that? Jenna? Nathan still didn't reply.
Someone else? Xander said. One of us here on the property? Someone in this family?
Come on, mate.
Then what?
Xander's voice was rising. Look, I don't know. Nathan heard himself snap. That's why I want to check it out before jumping to conclusions.
Don't, Dad, it sounds...
Xander looked at him.
Crazy.
Nathan blinked now, seeing the track in front of him properly for the first time, and put his foot on the brake.
Shit.
He was going the wrong way. He had started driving blindly towards the stockman's grave rather than back to the road. He hadn't even realised he was doing it, and a tiny part of him wondered if he should be worried about that. He listened to the engine tick over and tried to gather his thoughts. They felt loose and disconnected as though floating through his fingers. Duffy scratched the seat impatiently, and Nathan put his foot on the accelerator. He was approaching a gentle crest where the land rose enough to hide the track ahead. He gunned the Land Cruiser up the mild slope, turning the wheel for a wide U-turn. From the peak, the grave would be visible somewhere below. Instead, he saw a dust cloud. Nathan stopped, the tip of the Land Cruiser at the peak of the crest. The small haze billowed along in the distance for a half a minute before he caught the first glint of metal. He sat with his foot on the brake, watching the movement. It was coming along the dirt track, and from the direction of travel, there was only one place it could be headed. Nathan turned off his engine and heard the hum of the distant vehicle. He reached out and scrabbled in the glove box for his battered binoculars. Next to him, Duffy whined. Without the air conditioning, the car was getting warm. He looked through the binoculars until he found the moving vehicle. He recognized it immediately. He had seen it parked around Cameron's property for years. It was a general-use four-wheel drive used mostly by casual workers and most recently by Simon. The car slowed a few metres from the stockman's grave, its windscreen reflecting nothing but sky. Nathan steadied the binoculars. The vehicle came to a stop, its angle now turning the windscreen dark rather than opaque. Nathan watched, unblinking. There was a movement inside as the driver reached for something in the passenger seat. From a distance through the glass, Nathan could see a wrist and a sweep of long hair falling over a shoulder. It definitely wasn't Simon behind the wheel. It was a woman. Chapter 25. The driver's door opened and a jean-clad leg stepped out. The woman was hidden by the open door and Nathan's binoculars slipped a little, sending the scene out of focus. He steadied himself in time to see the door slam, and in the red dirt beside the stockman's grave stood a wholly familiar figure. Ilsa. Nathan realized he was holding his breath and blew it out long and heavy. The window of opportunity to announce himself came and went almost immediately. He didn't beat the horn or wind down the window and shout out. By the time he wondered whether he should, it was already too late. Ilsa stood with her back to him, looking small and isolated. A black shape lay at her feet. Some sort of bag, Nathan thought, hoping she wouldn't suddenly turn around. He was a fair distance away and his car was filthy, almost the same colour as the ground. He was parked nose forward on the edge of the rise and the sun was working mostly in his favour. It would be at least partly in her eyes if she turned his way. If she looked directly at him, she would probably see the car, though. If not, the ground and the distance and the stillness might be enough of a cover. Nathan lowered the binoculars, feeling uncomfortable. Below, he could just about make out the sight of Ilsa kneeling and reaching for the bag. Duffy whined and he poured some water into a plastic cup and pushed it towards her. A bead of sweat ran down his temple and into his eye. The interior of the car was heating up fast without the aircon. Nathan shifted again, his back damp against the seat. His hand hovered over the car keys. He couldn't start the engine now. There was no way Ilsa wouldn't hear it. Nathan picked up the binoculars again. Ilsa took something from her bag, but at that angle, Nathan couldn't tell what. She was bending forward close to the earth where her husband had been found and was partly hidden by the headstone. Nathan breathed out a lungful of hot air and tipped the last of his water bottle into Duffy's cup. The rest of his water was packed out of reach in the back. The interior of the car was stifling now. He let himself open the window a crack. It made no difference. Glenn had told him a story a few years earlier about James Buchanan from town who'd got into an argument with his wife. Worse than an argument, really, and as things escalated, she'd managed to lock James out of the house. He'd knocked on the door, then, when she wouldn't answer, gone around the outside of the family home and smashed the air conditioner with a cricket bat. Then he'd sat down and waited, bat in hand. His wife had been too scared to open the doors and windows, Glenn had said. Eventually she passed out from heat exhaustion. She had nearly died there on her kitchen floor. Nathan thought Glenn had been trying to make him feel better. See? Other people do shitty things too. It had not made him feel better at the time, at all. And now, as his skin stuck to the seat, he couldn't stop thinking about it. He glanced at Duffy and wound down the window some more. He wondered how long Ilsa was planning to stay. She must be feeling the temperature herself down there. When he looked again, he thought he could see her shoulders moving. Was she crying? He wondered. She knelt for another minute while he sweated. And then finally, at long last, she stood up. Nathan breathed out. She ran her hand over the headstone before picking up her bag from the ground. With a last look at the grave, she opened the car door. Nathan wiped a hand over his face, freezing mid-motion as Ilse suddenly stopped. She was scanning the land, her head turning slowly. As her gaze reached Nathan's direction, it seemed to settle. He held his breath. Down the binocular lenses, it was as though they were looking straight at each other. Can you feel anyone now? Only us. Nathan didn't dare move. He held the binoculars in place, staring back as his heartbeat thumped in his ears. Had she seen him? He wasn't sure, but there was something unfocused in her face that made him think perhaps not. At last, Ilse dropped her eyes. She climbed into the car and he heard it start. Nathan sat watching the dust trail as she drove away, back in the direction she'd come from. He made himself wait until she'd fully disappeared from sight before finally turning on his own engine. The air came through lukewarm at first, but he gasped with relief, gulping in huge lungfuls. He got out and grabbed water bottles from the back, and while both he and Duffy drank deeply, Nathan checked his watch. Ilse had been at the gravesite less than 15 minutes from start to finish. It felt longer, but it hadn't been. He frowned. All that way for 15 minutes. Sophie's voice popped into his head. We didn't do anything at the grave. We got out of the car, then we went home again. Nathan drank another mouthful of water, watched the horizon, and listened. No dust. No noise. She was gone. He put the car into gear and slowly made his way down over the crest and towards the grave. He parked a short distance away and got out. The dust circle around the headstone was long gone, but had been replaced with Ilse's footprints. He could see the soft dents in the ground where she had knelt. Could she have been praying, he wondered. She had never seemed the type, but death did funny things to people. Nathan touched the headstone, warm in the sun. Something felt wrong, but he couldn't tell what. Finally, he knelt down himself, and all of a sudden, he could see it. The hole that exposed beneath Cameron's body was disturbed. It had nearly refilled itself the last time he'd been there with Bub and Harry, but now it looked different again. Nathan reached out and touched the ground. The earth was freshly turned. He ran a hand through it, looking to see if Ilse had left anything here, but all he could feel was sandy soil. There were a few small things that could possibly be seeds, and Nathan thought of his own dad's grave. He and his brothers hadn't even liked the bloke, and they'd still planted a tree for him. Had Ilse been doing something like that for Cameron? The sun was beating down on him, and he shifted on his knees until he was in the shadow of the headstone. His movement left a mark in the dust that was familiar in a way that made Nathan feel slightly ill. He stood up so fast he was dizzy. Back in the safety of his car, Nathan turned up the air conditioner. It was a physical relief to be back in the cool, and he sat back, feeling the fibres in his body respond as his temperature crept back down towards normal. Cameron would have fought for his life to stay with his car. The thought came out of nowhere. Nathan reached for his water bottle and took a long sip. Cameron knew what it was like to be out there with no shelter and no supplies. It was a death sentence. If Cam had been forcibly separated from his car, he would have fought. Nathan stared at the grave. He pictured his brother's body as the tarp slipped away. There had been no injuries to his hands or face. Nathan took another slow sip of water and thought about that. An hour later, he was still not sure what to think. He knew he should go home. It was Cameron's funeral tomorrow. Another one for the land. Nathan should drive back and speak to his son, speak to Ilse. Instead, Nathan sat in his car beside the grave, until the sun moved the shadow almost all the way around the base of the headstone. No one else came by. Chapter 26. Nathan left it almost too late to make it home before nightfall, and as he pulled up, the windows of the house were glowing. He slammed his car door and stopped as his eyes fell on the large gum tree across the yard. Beneath it, hard to see in the growing dark but impossible to miss, was a gaping black hole. Nathan walked over and stood at the edge. Cameron's grave lay deep and empty, ready for tomorrow. There were no howls from the dingoes that night, and the air felt hot and thick as Nathan turned his back and trudged to the house. The voices coming from the kitchen were muffled but urgent as he closed the screen door behind him.
You said... Now, don't give me that bullshit. You said we could try it. For God's sake, I know, bub, but I have 1,000 other things to...
Three faces looked up as Nathan walked in.
Great, here comes your reinforcements.
Bub snapped at Ilsa, who was sitting at the kitchen table. She was wearing the same clothes Nathan had seen her in earlier at the Stockman's grave and was staring firmly into a glass of wine. Bub looked to have been pacing, his face set, while Liz hovered in the no man's land between them. Bub, just calm down, please. Liz shot a glance at Nathan. You've been a very long time. I was checking something at the fence line. What's going on here? Nothing, Ilsa said.
It's not bloody nothing.
Bub sounded like he'd been drinking.
I'm not bloody taking orders.
No one's asking you to, Bub. Bub looked at Nathan.
You tell her. You thought my mustering plan was a good idea, didn't you?
Wait. Nathan felt lost. That's what this is about?
Tell her.
Bub's voice was rising.
Tell her that I'm right about this.
Nathan frowned.
I haven't even had a chance. No, of course not. Jesus, I bloody knew it would be like this.
Bub closed his eyes.
This is bullshit.
Why are you doing this now, mate? Nathan said. Let's talk about it later. We're burying him tomorrow.
Yeah.
Bub opened his eyes and looked at Ilsa.
Still, silver lining for some, isn't it?
Bub, Liz said.
Enough!
Ilsa sat completely still as Bub walked out, slamming the kitchen door. They all stared after him as the sound reverberated in his wake.
What's his...
Nathan barely started before Liz turned on him.
You're no better. Have you spoken to your son yet? He's been worrying all day about you. He wanted Harry to take him out to search.
Nathan opened his mouth. I told him where I was going.
You've been gone for hours.
Well?
Your radio was off again. Shit.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
It's not me you should apologise to.
Before Nathan could answer, Liz looked at Ilsa.
Are you all right at least?
Ilsa, still sitting at the table, didn't move and didn't look up.
Yes.
Good. Liz sounded defeated.
Then I'm going to see to Bub.
The door swung shut behind her. Ilsa was still staring at the glass in front of her. Nathan opened the fridge and got a beer, leaning against the counter as he opened it and took a sip. He could see traces of the red dust in the creases of Ilsa's shirt and jeans. He had the same on his own, just to ask her. Instead, he nodded at the door. I didn't realise Bub was so serious about the mustering thing. I think it's less about the mustering and more about who makes the decisions around here now. Nathan didn't reply.
He called Cameron's lawyer, Ilsa said.
Bub did.
Asking about the property split and what happens now.
What did the lawyer say?
That Cam's share goes to the girls.
Not you.
Not technically, I'm just the guardian until they're old enough, but the point is it doesn't go to Bub or you.
Ilsa looked at him properly now.
Please tell me you already knew that.
Yeah, it's okay.
She looked relieved. She lifted her foot under the table and kicked a chair out a little way.
Nathan wavered, then pulled it over and sat down. I'm surprised Bub even knew who Cam's lawyer was, he said, let alone think to call him.
Your mum said that too. I told you, though, Bub's more switched on than you all give him credit for. especially about property work. Either way, she sighed. I guess he was really keen to know. Had Cameron promised him something different? I don't know. But with the way it's split now between you and me and him, I think Bub feels... She hesitated and took a sip from her glass. Left out or something. Maybe he's worried about what you're planning to do with the place. God, I haven't even thought about it. I mean, it's not like I asked for this. I'd probably sell it to him if he'd let me get a word in edgeways. I doubt he could afford it, Nathan said. Or to you, then. I definitely couldn't afford it. Not even at mates' rates? We'd have to be bloody good mates. The silence was laced with something at the edges. They were both too old to be embarrassed, and Nathan thought he saw the very corner of her mouth twitch. Ilsa looked at the empty beer in Nathan's hand, then looked at him. Will you have another one? He hesitated. He tried to avoid drinking too much around her, preferring to keep a clear head. Still, she sat opposite, looking over at him. He could. He would pay for it later, though, he knew, in a few days' time when he was back in his empty, silent house. Over the years, Nathan had discovered that his isolation was strangely easier to cope with when he was on his own for long stretches. Then the loneliness became routine, sometimes fading to barely more than a dull background ache. His early desperation for human contact had changed too. Other people's company should have been a relief, but now just stirred up complicated emotions that he later had to deal with all on his own long after they were gone. It was getting harder for him to recover each time and taking far longer to get back to normal, if he could even call it that. But if spending time with other people was bad enough, spending time with Ilsa was worse. As much as he wanted to, and the biggest and deepest part of Nathan really wanted to, he simply couldn't do it to himself. He looked at her now as the kitchen clock ticked loudly and took a breath. No. Thanks, though. Her eyes followed him as he stood up, and all of a sudden she looked very alone. He pushed in his chair. I'd better go and talk to Xander. That was true, actually. Ilsa looked down at the table for a moment, then nodded. It sounds like he was worried. Did he say something to you? No. But I wasn't here most of the day. I've barely seen him. Oh, yeah? Nathan tried to keep his voice light. What were you doing? Ilsa shrugged, and the red dust settled deeper into the fabric creases. I needed to get out of here, so I took the worker's vehicle and went for a drive. He frowned. What's wrong with yours? Strangely, Ilsa looked almost amused. It's very unreliable. I've got stuck a couple of times. Cam and Harry couldn't get it going? Sometimes, but then there'd be something else. You want me to take a look? Although, if they couldn't fix it, I can't make any promises. He thought he heard a movement in the hall, and they both looked over at the empty doorway. No one appeared. Ilsa looked back, a slightly odd expression on her face. Why not? She said. Thanks. It's in the small garage. No worries. Nathan stepped back from the table. Ask her. Where'd you drive to today? Ilsa's gaze flicked once more to the doorway. It was still empty. Don't tell the others. Okay. I went out to the Stockman's grave. I wanted some time alone to think about Cameron. With the funeral tomorrow, everyone's going to be talking about him. She looked down. I feel like Cam, the Cameron that I knew, could get lost in all this. Do you know what I mean? Nathan nodded. They might be burying Cameron tomorrow, but he realized part of him still half expected his brother to appear around the corner. It was almost unbelievable that the man he had grown up with and fought with and loved in his own way wasn't there anymore. That the deep hole outside could be for Cameron. Yeah, he said finally. He looked at Ilsa, with her eyes heavy above her dust-stained collar. I know what you mean. Chapter 27. Xander's bedroom door was shut. Nathan knocked. "Can I come in?" No response. He waited, then opened the door anyway. His son was lying on the bed, reading. Xander barely looked up. "You're back." Nathan sat on the end of the bed. "Sorry I was so long." Xander stared at the page, his eyes unmoving, then dropped his book on his chest. "Did you do your test?" His voice was not friendly. "Yes." "Could you see the flags from the road?" 2 out of 3. "Not every time." "So what does that mean?" "I don't know." Xander flopped back and picked up his book again. "Grandma said you were worried." No answer. "I really am sorry, mate." Xander stared at the page. Nathan waited as long as he could, but this time he broke the silence himself. "I didn't mean to." "It's fine." Xander turned to Paige. "It's not, though, is it? Not if you're unhappy." No response. Xander made a frustrated noise. "What do you want me to say? I'm trying to read." "I want to." "What?" "I don't know. Fix things." Xander turned another page. "Don't worry about it. There's no point arguing with you. Mum was right. You're always like this." "Like what?" Xander shook his head. "Forget it." "Mate, you can tell me." "No." Xander's face was hidden behind the book. "Do whatever you want. I don't care anymore." Nathan waited. Long minutes ticked by. Finally, Xander turned another page and Nathan got up and left the room. Ilse's four-wheel drive was covered in the requisite layer of dust. It was the only vehicle parked in the small garage, and someone had dumped a load of empty crates in front of it. They looked like they'd been there for some time. How long had the car been out of action? Nathan wondered as he fished the keys out of the footwell. He had to adjust the driver's seat as he climbed in and was again reminded of doing the same in Cameron's abandoned car. No clearer what to make of that, he pushed the thought to one side and tried the engine. It stuttered a little from lack of use, but turned over and came to life. Nathan listened to the hum. It was clear and steady. He switched on a lamp so he could see better in the evening gloom and opened the bonnet. He leaned inside and began checking it over, starting with the typical trouble spots and moving through to the less obvious problem areas. An hour later, he was on his back under the chassis, a torch in his hand and none the wiser. As he worked, his mind drifted to Xander, specifically to a faded memory from years earlier when his son had been about 8. They'd been camping out during one of his first solo visits, and Nathan had woken up in the back of his Land Cruiser to find Xander's sleeping bag empty beside him. He had lain there, listening for the sound of urine hitting the hard ground outside or the rustle of a cereal packet. When he hadn't heard either of those things, or anything in fact, he'd called out. There had been no answer. Nathan had sat up, the air already stifling and his clothes sticking to him with sweat. He'd called again, this time hearing the alarm in his own voice. No reply. The fear had been immediate and absolute. Nathan had clambered to his feet and stood by his car, his pulse pounding as he scanned the surroundings, almost blinded by terror. It would be over 40 degrees by noon. A child Xander's size might last half a day, depending on water and luck. How long had he been gone? Nathan didn't know. Kids far younger than Xander, toddlers even, had been known to walk for kilometres. Some had been found miles from their home. Some were lucky. For some, it was too late. Nathan had felt the sun beating down. When he was sure there was no sign of his son in any direction, he'd had to fight the overwhelming urge to pick one at random and start running. Instead, he had made himself get into the car and drive in increasing circles. He had found Xander within 15 minutes, over a slight rise and looking bewildered after following a cow and her calf too far. He was fine if bemused by his dad's flush-faced panic. But it had been the worst 15 minutes of Nathan's life. He had hugged Xander hard and then, shaking with relief, yelled at him, in a way he never had before or since. Nathan lay staring at the underside of Ilse's four-wheel drive now. He frowned, then clicked off his torch. He'd started to slide out when he heard the soft tread of footsteps outside the garage. He sat up and looked at the door, blinking into the night. Harry appeared.
"Here you are. Your mum was looking for you."
He looked past Nathan at the dusty vehicle.
"What are you doing?"
"Ilse said the car was playing up."
"Again?"
"Apparently." Nathan stood up and wiped the grease off his hands. Harry stepped into the light. A wire hook swung from his hand, its point threaded through two bloody dingo scalps. He peered beneath the open bonnet for so long Nathan began to get irritated. It was late and he was getting tired.
"What did Mum want?" he said. "Wanted to make sure you're okay."
Harry was standing at an awkward angle, almost blocking the way.
"You're feeling all right about tomorrow?"
"I suppose." Outside, the fresh grave was well hidden from sight. Who dug the hole for Cam?
"Me and Bub mainly. Xander and Simon helped as well."
The thought of the backpacker taking Nathan's place on a job like that riled him.
"I should have been here to help."
"Yeah, you should have." The thin streaks of blood on the scalps looked black in the dim light.
"It was still your brother, whatever problems you two had."
It was the note of judgment that made Nathan turn. "Me? What about you? I hear you were arguing with Cam not long before he died." Harry looked at him sharply.
"What are you talking about?"
"Simon heard you. One night when you were turning the generator off." Harry's features creased more deeply into a frown.
"I wouldn't call it an argument."
His thumb ran over the end of the wire hook.
"Cam and I exchanged words from time to time, same as you two did, you know that."
"What was it about?"
"Same as always, running this place."
Harry looked down, his features lost in shadow.
"I told you something was up with Cam and had been affecting his work. His concentration had gone to shit. I was having to chase after him, double-checking everything."
Simon thought you sounded angry.
"That's a bit strong."
"It was late. I was probably just a bit pissed off." "And you were saying something about knowing what was going on around here."
"Yeah."
Harry flashed a humorless grin.
"Well, that's fair enough, isn't it? Don't think anyone would argue with that."
They wouldn't, Nathan knew. Harry probably understood this property better than he or his brothers ever had. But despite that, and whatever went right or wrong with the place, it was their names on the title. Harry's was a strangely insecure existence, Nathan realised, now he thought about it. This might be his home and he might seem like family, but Sergeant Ludlow had been right. Harry was an employee, and Cameron, or Ilse now, just had to say the word, and an employee would be gone. "Harry," Nathan said, "did Cam threaten to get rid of you?"
"No, mate."
It had been a shot in the dark, but the answer was so breezily dismissive that Nathan felt a seed of doubt form. He thought about Cameron, who ran this place so efficiently, kept a tight ship, as Harry had said himself. Would Cameron let himself be challenged by a worker, even if that worker was Harry? Nathan looked at him now.
"You sure?" "I'm sure," Harry said. "Look, he reminded me who was in charge when I needed reminding, and he liked me to mind my own business. But when he takes his eye off the ball and that means more work around here, it becomes my business whether I like it or not. There's nothing I can do but bring it up, so that's what I did."
"Is that why you didn't say anything to us?"
"I didn't say anything," Harry said, "because I felt bad. I still feel bad about it. I thought Cam needed to hear what I had to say, but I don't know, maybe I should have been listening more. I didn't know that Jenna woman had tried to get in touch or how bloody stressed he was about it. I wish he'd said."
Nathan was quiet for a minute. "Why do you think he was so worried about her?"
"I don't know. Cam said at the time he'd done nothing wrong and I believed him.
He looked at Nathan.
Believed you and you said the same.
She's not in England. Hasn't been for a couple of weeks. Bali, apparently. Harry was very still.
Is that right?
The silence stretched out.
Look, Harry said. His voice was gentle now. This whole thing with Cam, it feels complicated, but when it comes down to it, I think it's actually pretty bloody simple.
Is it?
Yeah. He was not a happy man, mate. Not at all. And I'm starting to think that had been the case for a long time.
Harry sighed.
We need to get this funeral out of the way. Everything will look better after that.
I suppose.
It will. Always the way, trust me.
Harry frowned at Ilse's car.
You planning to stay out here much longer? I'll leave the generator on if you want.
Nathan shook his head. I'll stop now.
You worked out what's wrong with it?
No. Nathan had done everything he could think of. It seemed to be in good shape to him.
Yeah, I always had trouble finding the problem too.
Harry stared again at the exposed engine.
I had one idea, though.
I'm all ears, mate. Harry hesitated as out in the blackness they heard footsteps on the veranda and Liz's voice called out.
Harry!
Never mind. He tapped the car. I should take another look myself first. There'll be no rush anyway. Ilse hates driving that thing. She's not going anywhere in that.
Harry!
Liz's voice again.
I'll tell her you're fine.
Harry nodded at the bloodied scalps at the end of the hook in his hand.
Better do something with these as well.
You got them then?
Yeah.
Wanted to get it done before everyone arrives tomorrow. They were getting too comfortable. I thought Bub was going to do it. A look flitted across Harry's face that suggested Bub might also be getting a little too comfortable.
I had the chance and got it done, he said. If you finished out here, generator's going off in 10. I need to get some sleep.
He swung the hook gently. The matted fur and skin was already curling at the edges.
Big day tomorrow.
Chapter 28. Nathan awoke to the ache of dehydration pulsing in his temples. He squinted into the early morning light and reached for his water glass beside the couch. It was empty. He must have drunk it during the night, but he couldn't remember doing so. It felt like a hangover with none of the fun. He tried to remember how much water he'd drunk yesterday. Not enough, clearly. He stood up too fast and had to steady himself briefly against the wall as his head spun. He waited, blinking slowly until the sensation passed. He looked around. Something felt off. Nathan frowned as his gaze was dragged once more to Cameron's painting. It hung there in front of him, looking the same as ever. Not quite, though, somehow. He stepped closer, his head still pounding. The scene was fully familiar with the same colours and shapes. The dark grave and bright sky swam in front of his eyes. The translucent smudge was still there, as unclear as ever. What was different? Was the horizon slightly tilted? He wasn't sure and reached out, instantly making things worse as the frame slid at an alarming angle too far the other way. He corrected it hastily, trying to judge a straight line.
Be careful. Liz was at the doorway. She was entirely in black except her eyes, which were bloodshot red.
Cameron loved that.
Maybe we should take it down for today. I can put it somewhere.
What? No. Why would we?
She came over, gently reaching out and straightening the frame. Much better, Nathan could tell immediately. Stop it getting damaged, he said.
But everyone will want to see it. Belongs here on the wall. Cameron would have wanted that.
I suppose. I just thought, you know, with the subject matter.
It's still a beautiful painting.
Liz wiped her cheek with the back of her hand. Nathan hadn't even realised she was crying. And whatever was wrong with Cameron, he was always a beautiful painter. Reminds me of all the best things about him. I don't want to hide that away.
Yeah, all right. Nathan shrugged. It was only a thought.
Liz looked over. How's Xander coping?
I haven't spoken to him since last night. He's still pissed off with me for being gone so long yesterday.
Are you surprised?
Nathan considered.
He was, actually, a little. It wasn't like Xander to hold a grudge or get pissed off in the first place, for that matter.
There was nothing for him to panic about. When I'm back at my place, I'm out on my own all the time.
That's exactly part of the problem, Nathan. Liz turned to him. Listen, I want you to have a chat with Steve today. Get him to make you an appointment at the clinic.
Why? What for?
See if he can give you something to get your head straight.
I don't need...
You do. Because if you think it's all right to disappear like that, to the point where your son is scared about what you might be up to, then there's something seriously wrong. Liz lifted her head to look at him properly. Please, Nathan, losing one of you is bad enough. Today is going to be the worst day of my life. I can't go through this twice.
He couldn't bear the look in her eyes, so he nodded.
All right. There was a noise in the hall, and they both turned to see Bub in the doorway. He had a slightly unstable air that made Nathan suspect he'd already started drinking, or perhaps not long stopped from the night before.
What are we doing?
Bub leaned a supporting hand against the door jamb.
Admiring Cam's masterpiece?
Liz flinched at the sarcasm. Definitely been drinking, Nathan thought.
We were talking about whether to take it down or not, he said.
Shit, no, you don't mess with Cam's picture. He'd bloody come back and haunt you for that.
Bub almost laughed, and Nathan felt Liz tense.
What do you want, Bub? He said.
Oh, yeah, funeral guy just called.
And?
Body's on its way.
Nathan had to wear his dad's old suit. Liz had dragged it out from somewhere and handed it to him without a word. It was 25 years old but had the stiffness of rarely worn fabric. It was black and fit well. Nathan put his hand in the jacket pocket and found a faded supply list written in his dad's handwriting. He crumpled the paper without reading it and fought the urge to rip off the jacket. Bub walked into the living room and dropped his beer when he saw Nathan.
Shit! I thought for a second...
Bub took a step back before recovering. He bent down and picked up his bottle, swiping at the floor with a dirty tissue while he avoided looking at Nathan.
You seen yourself, mate? You look just like him.
Nathan turned and stared at his dark and distorted reflection in the TV screen. He didn't recognise himself.